We're speaking to you from the Sam Houston Coliseum in Houston, Texas, where the 58th Annual Convention of the American Federation of Labor has just opened. Mr. William Green, President of the Federation, will make the keynote address to the convention. Mr. Green.
Mr. Chairman, Your Excellency Governor Allred, Your Honor Mayor Bonneville, representatives of the Chamber of Commerce, business interests of the city, organized labor of Houston, Texas, and of the great state of Texas, fraternal delegates to this convention from Great Britain, distinguished friends, officers, and delegates in attendance at this great convention of the American Federation of Labor, and to my radio audience. This great 58th Annual Convention of the American Federation of Labor assembled this morning under the most favorable and auspicious circumstances in this splendid city of the Southland, Houston, Texas. We were all deeply touched by the warmth of the welcome extended us by the representatives of this commonwealth, of the city, and of the organized labor movement of this section of the South. We will be privileged to enjoy the hospitality of the people of Houston for the next 2 weeks. I want to, in the name and in behalf of the officers and delegates in attendance at this Congress of Labor, extend to all who spoke this morning our sincere thanks and to express to them our deep appreciation of the warmth and the cordiality of the kind invitation extended us. This is the 58th Annual Convention of the American Federation of Labor. That means that this great economic organization has been functioning for 58 continuous years. It has grown and developed out of the study, education, and experience the great representatives of labor have been able to give this great organized labor movement. And I'm proud to say that we assemble today in this city of the Southland a strong, courageous, militant organization of workers representing more than 5 million working men and women. We are stronger numerically, and in my judgment, we occupy a larger place in the hearts and minds of the people of the nation than we ever did before in the history of our movement. We come to Houston with a larger paid-up membership than was ever recorded on the books of the American Federation of Labor heretofore. That represents progress. That reflects, as no word can interpret, the standing, influence, growth, and expansion of the American Federation of Labor. But you assemble here in a dual capacity. As the representative of organized labor, seeking earnestly to pursue the pathway of peace, cooperation, and understanding. Conscious of our responsibilities, not only those we represent, but to the great nation as well. In addition, we come as warriors from the battlefield, the place where in our own way and in our own communities, we carry on the struggle in behalf of the American Federation of Labor. We are constantly at grips with those opposing forces who seek to limit, if not destroy, the activities of the American Federation of Labor. We have always known the classification of our common foe, those who have refused to see eye to eye with the American Federation of Labor. But it is almost tragic when we think that not only must we come to grips with a common foe, but we must carry on against those who lead a dual movement within the ranks of labor, a movement formed for the purpose of destroying the American Federation of Labor. You know better than I can tell you of the raids made upon organizations firmly established in the communities of the land. Why should our unions be raided? Why should our organizations be the subject of attack? Not from the open foe, but from them who have always professed friendship. Well, my friends, this convention will make a partial answer to that question. And after we have done so, we will go back to our homes and to our communities, peace-minded but happy warriors, determined that the American Federation of Labor shall remain as an institution, a part of the institutional life of our great nation. I want to bring to this audience this morning some facts which I think are pertinent. Then allow you, intelligent, educated, understanding men and women, to draw your own conclusions. I have in my hand this morning a printed pamphlet which was submitted by the leader of the dual movement called the Committee for Industrial Organization to the Congress of the United States. It was presented to the Congress and to the people of our nation at the time when I was called upon to begin my service as President of the American Federation of Labor. Let me quote from it. Imported revolution is knocking at the door of the United Mine Workers of America and of the American people. The seizure of this Union is being attempted as the first step in the realization of a thoroughly organized program of the agencies and forces behind the Communist International at Moscow for the conquest of the American continent. The overthrow and destruction of this government, with the establishment of an absolute and arbitrary dictatorship and the elimination of all forms of popular voice in governmental affairs, is being attempted on a more gigantic scale, with more resolute purpose and with more crafty design than at any time in the history of this nation. These words I have read are included in this statement prepared by the chairman of the Industrial Committee, the Committee for Industrial Organization, the dual movement established in America for the purpose of destroying the American Federation of Labor. Now, in this statement, this printed pamphlet, there is set forth 9 definite, complete objectives of this communist conspiracy formed by this revolutionary movement. Time forbids me reading all, but I'll read 2, and they will be significant, and you will understand the significance of these statements immediately when they are read. 7. One of the objectives, as listed as 7, seizure of the American Federation of Labor with the ouster of its officials, and through such seizure, gaining control of all its affiliated unions and trade unions. That was a specific objective. 8, conversion of all craft trade unions into single units of workers within an industry known as industrial unions. That was the objective, we're told, of the communists. You understand that, don't you? Here's another one. Wherever possible in conducting their activities in America, the communists have attempted to bore from within organizations already existing and to utilize them for their ultimate ends and purposes. They have been particularly active in trying to bore from within the United Mine Workers of America for the reasons that it is the largest single labor organization in the country, includes a larger number of races and nationality among its members, and is the nearest approach, in their opinion, to a one big union, which is their ideal conception of a labor union and their objective for all labor unions. Isn't it strange, my friends, that this man who prophesied that the communists were going to seek to destroy our craft unions and establish industrial unions instead, to establish here in America a one big union, is now engaged in leading a movement
that has for its purpose that very objective. He is now attempting to do what he prophesied the communists were going to do, and is leading a movement designed to wipe out the structure of the American Federation of Labor, established and built over a long period of time. Ah, here's another one. Through this organization, the revolutionary leaders in America are making a nationwide attempt to obtain control of the American Federation of Labor, reorganize the craft unions on the basis of one big union in an industry, and weld them into the central revolutionary agency in America. What's the CIO trying to do now? That very thing. Realize that very objective as set forth in this document, penned and prepared by the chairman of the Committee for Industrial Organization. Now the scene changes. I want to bring to you the contrast. I hold within my hand a press report published in the New York Times, dated September 12, 1938. In his speech today before 50,000 Mexican workers assembled in Mexico City's bullring, John L. Lewis, chairman of the Committee for Industrial Organization, said that the United States was in danger of a fascist movement. Mr. Lewis's address was in connection with the International Congress Against War and Fascism, which is in session here. The bullring was jammed with demon-clad workers, red flags, including those of the Communist Party of Mexico and of the Lenin section of the CTM, Confederation of Mexican Workers, were waving when Mr. Lewis arose to speak. He stated, "I salute this great meeting of Mexican people and Latin American, European, and Asiatic delegates in the name of the CIO and its 4,000 members. This meeting was held in a bullring in Mexico. It was a fitting and appropriate place for the delivery of such an address. I've always understood that a bullring was built for the purpose of allowing the bull to show his prowess. And I've further understood that when the bull entered the ring, the red flags waved for the purpose of making him more ferocious. So here we have the setting. Here's the chairman of the Industrial Commission, of the Committee for Industrial Organization. A few years ago, just a short time ago, presenting this document. Here he is in a bullring in Texas, speaking to those who are waving the red flag that he denounced in this document. I note in the report of the address that fascism was attacked. But I can't find anywhere in the report of the address where a single denunciatory word was directed against communism and Nazism. Well, my friends, the American Federation of Labor was invited to attend that meeting at Mexico. We were asked to be represented there. The American Federation of Labor refused to go there or to send a representative there. Secondly, the American Federation of Labor is not only opposed to fascism, but it is also equally opposed to communism and Nazism. We're against every ism except Americanism. And the American people, I'm sure, will, if they do not now, ultimately appreciate the fact that the American Federation of Labor is the nation's guarantee against the invasion in our social, economic, and political life of fascism, Nazism, or communism here in America. I have repeatedly said that in the development of our industrial and economic philosophy, we apply in the broadest terms the both forms of organization. The industrial form, where circumstances and conditions permit. The craft form, where the skilled workers need protection in order to develop a wage standard commensurate with the requirements of American citizenship. But in the development of our organization structure, we are not going to permit any organization, let it be the communists against whom we were warned, or the Committee for Industrial Organizations, to destroy our craft unions established out of years and years of struggle and sacrifice here in America. Now may I develop briefly our economic philosophy. We believe in collective bargaining, an organization of the workers, and we want to establish here in America a condition where men may exercise their right to organize and bargain collectively, free from intimidation and coercion. We accept an invitation to the employers of the country to accept that well-developed modern philosophy of the American Federation of Labor. We appeal to them to stop making warfare through their organized agencies upon organized labor and upon organized labor's industrial and economic philosophy. We believe in private ownership, the right of management to own and control and manage their property. We believe they should earn a fair return upon investment, but at the same time we demand that they accord to labor the right that we guarantee to them or are willing to concede to them, the right of labor to organize, to bargain collectively, to speak through their chosen representatives, and to be paid a wage as high as industry can afford, and that will keep the workers of the country in decency and in comfort. We are not opposed to the National Labor Relations Board. We the American Federation of Labor participated in the formation of that act. We feel it would be unnecessary here, however, if the employers of the nation had refrained from making warfare upon organized labor. Had they accepted the realities of the situation here as the employing interests of Great Britain accepted the realities of the situation there and dealt with us freely, frankly, openly, conceding to us our rights and we conceding to them their rights, there would have never been any need for the Wagner Labor Relations Act. What we object to is the administration of the law. It is badly administered. It is not administered in accordance with the spirit and the letter of the law. What we wish and what we demand is that a judicial body, keenly conscious of its responsibility, impartial in its attitude, shall administer this law and apply it without fear or favor to all groups of organized workers. But our complaint is this, that the National Labor Relations Board, in the administration of the act, has become the ally of the CIO, and we won't stand for that. No government agency possesses the right to substitute their own peculiar economic philosophy for the plain provisions of an act, nor can they or should they be permitted to be influenced in the administration of the law by their own peculiar ideas. We want to be free. American laboring men demands we be free, demand that we be free. Free to work out our own problems. We resent governmental control and governmental dictation. We want to organize free from governmental control and governmental administration. And it is because we believe the board is exceeding its authority, covering a field never intended to be covered by the act, that we protest against the administration of the act. And this convention here will make the answer. You will formulate our policy, the policy we shall pursue in our efforts to secure relief. You will lay down the rules that we must follow. And when the policy has been formulated and announced, the world will know that we're going to the Congress of the United States and ask them, not only ask, but demand that the Wagner Labor Relations Act be so amended as to prevent a biased board from administering the act in their own way and against the spirit and letter of the law. Now I'm through. There are other subjects I shall talk to you about during this convention. I have referred to some of the outstanding, pressing problems that we must consider. Form of organization, our future policy, and all. But I know that during the 2 weeks we will be here, we will deliberate calmly, we will form our judgments in accordance with the facts, and we shall go back to our homes carrying with us the most pleasant memories of a delightful visit spent here. I thank you.
The You have just heard Mr. William Green, president of the American Federation of Labor, speaking before the 58th Annual Convention of the Federation assembled in the Sam Houston Coliseum at Houston, Texas. This is the National Broadcasting Company.